Welcome, welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 163, Full Transparency. We are Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. I am May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
You can always reach us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com through email at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. We're on the platforms of podcasts, aka Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you can listen to podcasts all over the world now. So, you know, I'm glad that that's there so that you may hear our beautiful voices.
From every corner of the world.
We do have Patreon, if you do not know that, we do, and it has been ongoing for 2+ years now, I think.
Wow, we're millionaires.
Yes.
That's insane.
It is insane. I wish we were millionaires, but that is not the case. Yeah. But we do talk about
dollar-inaires.
We do talk about everything and anything, including, you know, anything MCU related. We've been covering the shows like Loki, doing the movies Black Widow, upcoming. We did Shang-Chi recently. We're probably gonna do Eternals. We did Lovecraft Country on HBO Max. Nope. We did Watchmen.
As soon as May watches Squid Game.
Yes, as soon as I finished Squid Game, I finished the first episode, quote unquote finished. Wow. I fell asleep.
You fell asleep, May.
That's for
you. It was 1 a.m. in the evening. Okay.
Okay. Well, then that's your fault.
It is. I only have myself to blame.
Squid Game for you to watch than there are that they just had to watch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's
good. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Squid Game is easier, right? There's only one season so far, exactly. So.
Yeah,
it'll be fine. So we're gonna do that next, and we have Doom Patrol upcoming as well, and we had
a request to do Sex Education.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes,
excellent show.
I have to binge that one.
Well,
I have to get caught up. May is the only one that's caught up on it through season.
I dropped off
and like halfway through season two, so we have a little bit of homework to do on that one, but we can get around to that one as well.
Yes, it's manageable. And most recently, we did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We had our special guest Sonya on it, and it was an excellent episode. So go listen to that at patreon.com/DCTVGumption. Over in the news, we do have Wentworth Miller coming back to Legends of Tomorrow as Captain Cold for the 100th episode, which is very exciting news.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm happy for him. Also, it's like the premise for, and Katie Lotz is directing it, by the way. So that's pretty special.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah. You've got like all, you know, all the families in the whatever of the show. But the premise is that Gideon is like doing a kind of like retrospective episode from Gideon's point of view. They're like, you know, we have some characters that have been on, like Sarah that's been on since the beginning. But you know, Sarah's just a person, so there's probably aspects of things that she didn't see, but Gideon sees all apparently. So that's what they're doing, and that's how they're bringing back Captain Cold. So I guess it's going to be in a flashback.
That's really cool. Because I was wondering how they're going to bring him back, but that's really interesting.
Thank you for explaining it to us just now.
You're welcome.
I was like, awesome.
I read the article. Well, hopefully, like, I mean, I'm really glad that he's coming back. Hopefully that they stop at season one characters with him. Because I don't need the Hawks.
We do not need them. That's okay.
We don't. No one misses them.
No one does. Yeah, no.
We do not require them.
I always forget that they were on the show to begin with. So there you go.
That's great, you know?
Yeah.
The memory.
It's beautiful, yes. And then in some interesting news, we have the Wayne Family Adventures are getting webtoon, or it was a webtoon.
They have a webtoon, yes.
It's getting a live action adaptation, so they announced the cast for that, and like it made me really interested. It is.
A couple of issues that have been out via webtoon, but
yeah,
it got so many subscribers for, you know,
yeah,
a DC comic, so they're really excited.
It's been super popular, and the cast list is pretty interesting too. Like, I don't know, like half these people. So I was trying to look up Jonathan Bentley, because Jonathan Bentley plays. Okay, here's the cast. Jonathan Bentley plays Bruce Wayne, which I tried to look him up, and I don't even know what he looks like. I couldn't find the only Jonathan Bentley I saw was like a children's book author, and I was like, mm-hmm. I don't think this is right. But Yoshi Tsudarso is playing Dick Grayson, which is interesting. So we have like an Asian Dick Grayson. Lisa Foyles as Babs, Tim Neff as Jason Todd, Peter Sudarso. Ooh, we got a brother combo here.
Oh, love Tim. That.
So Yoshi Sudarso and Peter Sudarso as Dick and Tim. And then Megan Camarena as Stephanie Brown, Jemma Nguyen as Cassandra Cain, Carter Rockwood as Damien and Sean Fiction Seagal as Duke, and then Marcus Weiss as Alfred Pennyworth. And then didn't you say, like, May, that the kid playing Damien, is he Mina?
He is. He is. Mm-hmm. And somebody informed me that I think he's Iraqi specifically, which is exciting. Hold on. I'm going to double check that. But yes, he is. He is definitely 100% Mina that I know of, which is really exciting because I feel like that casting as it should be, you know.
Well, if you see the actual webtoon comic of the family,
he's from Kuwait. My bad.
Wait, okay.
How dare you?
I know, I'm sorry.
Like, Damien does look brown on the thing. So it's good that they, you know, because sometimes comics tend to most times comics tend to whitewash him a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see that he is brown in the comics and that he's going to be played by a Mina actor on the live action series. So
very exciting.
Maybe Titans can unclench now that we have an actual
Batman
show, and they can go back to the Titans on that show.
One would hope, but I'm honestly hoping that we don't get a season 4 of Titans anyway, so they can figure something out elsewhere. And Camrys has a new comics project called The Tower for DC Comics. In which, at least I think it's DC Comics. Let me look.
Isn't it like a sci-fi? Wasn't it like a video?
Just a second. I sent it.
It's for a video game. it's a tie-in to a video game, but it's a sci-fi fantasy story that Camrys is like his own creation. Yes, so this is all coming from his mind. Inspired
world in a sci-fi comic. So that's
so cool. I love that he's putting himself out there and getting all of these
consistently and getting high quality exposure for his projects. That's great.
Yeah, it says he pitched this 7 or 8 years ago, and now they're making it into, I think, a series or a comics series, which is really, really exciting. And it looks really cool, great too. Like, the art is excellent. Congrats to him. And, you know, we're getting near to, this is not really news because we already knew they were coming up, but next week we have Batwoman and Legends. So remember that.
Oh my God. And DC fandom.
And DC fandom. Yes.
On the weekend.
True. So it's a lot going on there in DC world. But to our format.
I'm just glad that Batwoman and Legends have moved to Wednesdays. So we get our weekend back.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Indeed, it is exciting. We will move into side A and side B of the episode. We're just going to start with Stargirl and then move into Supergirl. And to take us away is Jessica.
Okay, so side A is called Exercise because we are exercising some demons here. Stargirl is boringly titled Summer School Chapter 9. And in this episode, Eclipso takes aim at the Whitmore Dugans. Pat is reminded of some painful memories of his past involving the original JSA and their fight to take down Eclipso. In the flashback to, quote-unquote, decades ago, Bruce Gordon is having buyer's remorse, and he wishes that he never brought Eclipso back from the island. He's ready to end it all, but Eclipso makes him an offer that he could refuse but doesn't, and gives Eclipso his body in exchange for Eclipso killing the husband of the woman that he loves, because obviously when her husband dies, then she will immediately fall in love with him. Somehow that made sense to him. Logic, yes. And, you know, I don't know if Eclipse ever made that happen, but what he's doing in the meantime, while he has his body, is wreaking total havoc on a city, including killing Dr. McKnighter's daughter, Rebecca.
I feel like he must have killed the woman and her
maybe
husband, probably.
Probably he killed both of them, probably. And she's like, I'm not letting this body go. At the funeral of Rebecca, the JSA, including Jay Garrick, debate over how to defeat Eclipso. And Wildcat is like an asshole. Like, he's not letting Pat have a voice at all. And Starman is shooing Pat away to go work on the car while he takes a walk in the shade. Later returning, Starman, aka Sylvester, reveals to Pat that Eclipso is a spiritual parasite and that the only way to stop him is to kill the host body, which means killing Bruce Gordon. Both Pat and Jay are completely against this idea, but get outnumbered by Wildcat, who again is a dick, Hourman, and the deciding vote is surprisingly Starman, who sides with the other two. They get the job done, but the death of Bruce Gordon also killed the JSA, and they disperse and don't really get back together until it's time to fight the ISA. And as we know, that did not end well because the JSA were not united. And this is a secret that Pat has been keeping from Courtney all summer long, and she's not happy about it. Meanwhile, Mike is forced to confront the guilt he feels for his role in Icicle's death when Eclipso haunts him with a vengeful Cameron that threatens Mike with an eye for an eye situation in retaliation. So he kills, in Mike's little nightmare world, Buddy the dog, which, what did Buddy ever do to you?
Right?
Cameron. And threatens to kill Cameron's Mike's parents until Courtney saves him with a stab, and she also saves Pat with her stab as well, because Courtney is light. Courtney is love. Also, Barbara comes face to face with Jordan McKinn, who's trapping her in her car and is quite literally has her frozen in place until the Shade manages to reach through to her and snap her out of it so she can get home and reunite with her family. Finally, Courtney is struggling through all of this to hold on to hope after Eclipso keeps targeting all her friends and now her family, and she is making a plan with Beth over the phone to get more proactive in hunting Eclipso down. Andy Armiganian directed the episode, written by Alfredo Septian and Turi Meyer. What sparked joy?
I feel like Armiganian does a lot of directing. Mm-hmm. Yep, that one. Directing and seems to do a good job. So nice. I feel like I usually like those episodes. And I love that we had Mike actually deal with the death of Icicle. I feel like that was something that was like kind of like swept under the rug for a while. So I'm glad that he is, you know, suffering consequences for it in his mind, if anything. And also, I agree with what you will say, that finally they gave Cameron something to do. It wasn't even Cameron, but at least that actor had to work for his coin on that day. And I think it makes a lot of sense that Mike would fear that Cameron would behave that way. And yet at the same time, this is one of the ones that was like the easiest to know, like, okay, well, that's obviously not Cameron, right? But it still was like...
As soon as he wasn't interested in Courtney, I'm like, oh, that's
exactly. This is a lie. But I thought they did a really good job of like making it feel creepy. And, you know, making it also feel like important for who Mike is. And even just like, I don't know, I guess for who Cameron is not, like if we're working backwards, because they don't give us anything for Cameron. The fact that we know that that's not Cameron at least tells us something about Cameron. Also, it was a nice duel, like the fact that they got Barbara in the same episode as Mike is like interesting, the way that they're pairing up the fears. Although Yolanda did not get a pairing. I don't know what that means, but Mike and Barbara's were thematically connected, and also the fact that they're bonding more, like they're becoming really like mother and son over the course of this season, as opposed to just two people who haven't lived in the same house. So, yeah, I enjoyed this. I also really, I do like the repeated use of Courtney as, like, the light, the pure of heart, the one that, like, fends off all evil or, you know, darkness or whatever. But I also, on the flip side, like that she got to be upset and, you know, lash out at, quote-unquote, Pat because of the secret that he was keeping. And it wasn't just like, they weren't just like, okay, well, one off. You know, like, okay, well, yeah, that was a secret. And then you find out that the mom knew too. So obviously that's going to open up a whole new can of worms, both at the end of that episode and going into the next one. I also loved creepy-ass Bruce watching through, like, the window or whatever, like, ha-ha, discord in the house. Yes, what I wanted. He is... continuing to be appropriately creepy, even when all he does is stand around and watch people suffer because of things that he has created.
It's the laugh, man. He's just nailed that laugh. It's so creepy.
Definitely. Also, I thought that it was good that we got a flashback that more fully fleshed out what happened with the JSA. I feel bad for Pat in the flashback, and I also understand why it's like shameful, like you wouldn't want to bring it up. So like, I totally get why he didn't say it. But I also like that it does not diminish the fact that Courtney would be upset and, you know, deserves to be upset. Also, I guess it's good that it was like a dark secret, quote unquote, like that is a stain on the JSA. So it was not like my favorite version of I Killed Someone, Gossip Girl, when Serena was like, I killed someone by offering them a line of their own Coke so they would not rape me. And then they OD'd. That was my fault. My bad. I was like, was it? Was that your fault? You did kill that person. Literally, literally, you did kill that person. And now it's coming to bite you in the ass. So yeah, I think, I guess it's like, this was like much more of like an introspective character episode. There wasn't as much like forward driving of the plot, but it is nice that we're rounding out everybody's little mini arcs before we get to the big bad battle. Also, I love that the Shade was what saved Barbara. Like, you know, Shade anti-hero, we stan. I would like, I guess that's not a joy. That will be a no joy. So I will stop talking now.
I agree about the Shade. I think even though he wasn't really physically in this episode, just like hearing his voice and knowing his presence was around, you know, brought me joy because I love the guy who plays him. And even he does so much, you know, even though he's not on screen, he just does what he has to do. So I really like that. And I like the fact that they sort of introduce, because I know in the comics, Starman and Shade sort of have an on again, off again relationship, and that they're sometimes enemies and they're sometimes sort of friends. So I like that they really like played with that in this episode, in the sense that the Shade, as soon as he showed up, Pat's like, oh my God, we have to go after him. And Starman's like, no, I got this. So we got inklings of that relationship kind of in the episode. And that was really great. I also like the fact that we got to see more of the JSA rather than just because we were introduced to them on a night where they were, you know, battling the ISA and doing very heroic things. And now we see them more as humans, and they're not necessarily doing such heroic things, or they're actually not doing great things at all, and having to grapple with like these decisions, you know, the whole no kill, I'm a superhero rule, and it's interesting to see like how everyone sort of fared on, and which side they were on, because, you know, even though Starman tells Pat that he's like, no, you're right, I was like, this is too easy, he's wrong. You know, he's going to change his mind. So it's interesting to see, like, A, the dynamics between all of them and what made them change their mind. It was just, like, threatening the family. So it's interesting to see, like, how sometimes superheroes can be on this moral pedestal and they tell other people that they shouldn't be doing these things, but then they turn around and maybe do the same thing with their lives or their families are threatened. So that was a really interesting dynamic. I think the show brought in really well. It was just also great to see Jay again in his little, you know, costume.
And that he was against
and
it.
And yes, he was against it.
Yes.
We can always stand Jay. So all of that was great. And just seeing like how.
And he was the nicest one.
And he was the nicest one. Yeah. Like Wildcat was just.
But yeah, they're not going to disrespect Jay Garrick on Stargirl.
But just seeing sort of also Courtney be the, you know, the light, but also like the sort of the center who brings people back from whatever hallucinations they might be having with Eclipso. And it's really interesting to actually see the backstory of Eclipso and like how, like why he chose Bruce, you know, as a kid, now that we're seeing him, like why that name and who he was and how he even came to the US basically from the island. And it was really interesting to like see how.
Oh, I just came up with a theory.
Ooh, okay. To see like the stain of the JSA and how that affected them moving forward, and how all of it has to do with Eclipso, which makes Eclipso look more like a menacing villain as well, because the only way that they could defeat him was to kill someone. And so I like that we're going to have to kind of address that with the new JSA and to see how far they're willing to go, because we've seen like Yolanda be like, yeah, we're going to have to kill him. But, you know, seeing all of those dynamics kind of come up again with the younger generation is really interesting. What's his face? Icicle. I always want to call him Iceman.
George Kent.
Yeah, I think he has like such a presence as an actress. When he showed up, it's like really menacing. He's just chilling in the back seat and, you know, just talking to Barbara, but you could just sense the eeriness of it all. And I really like how that was played out, and that was all in her head, because initially I was like, wait, does the storm, is it a snowstorm? So all of that was like, it was just a really well done episode trying to dive in into like Pat's secret. And I'm also really happy that Pat's secret is not something that he personally did. Like, he had a hand in it sort of, but he wasn't the one. Like, I thought it was gonna be something worse.
He killed Rebecca somehow.
Yes. Oh my God.
It's like he's seeing her coffin because he killed her. Like, why are they calling you a liar, Pat?
I was worried too.
All of that was really great. I'm so happy Pat's still sort, you know, the guy we know him as. He just has like a secret he's ashamed of, and that's understandable. But you know, he's not the one who actually killed anybody, so I'm happy for that.
I just thought this was another great episode in general. Just like the writing wise, thematically, it was very appropriately spooky for the October season. The way that they utilize the storm and how they separated it. And it's kind of funny because, well, not funny. It's not funny at all. Eclipse was very, very dangerous. But he started out with just one person because he focused all of his energy on Yolanda. And then the next episode, he's got two people. So he's got Beth and Rick, and they're both in separate places, which I think Sonya mentioned, mentioned also in her feedback like last week. And now he's spread out even more. So he's got all of, or like three quarters of the Whitmore Dugans. He's got Pat in the basement. He's got Mike. And then he's got Barbara stranded out in the middle of nowhere coming home from work. So it's just like also goes to show how much stronger he's getting, that he's able to affect more people in separate places at the same time. So all of that is pretty appropriately, like really, really scary, intense. And I think like the intensity, you know, they use a lot of cues from like the weather and the storm, because I forgot, like, it was just 4th of July last week, and now it felt like it was October. Yeah. On the show. The way that like the storm was acting up, and how they kind of separated each of the characters out and gave them their own little separate little hellscapes. I liked getting more backstory on you know, Bruce and Eclipso. And, you know, kind of how Eclipso has his backstory, how he got off the island and how he got up to this point. Pat, getting to know what Pat's secret actually was very good. And, you know, seeing the detail of like what happened with the JSA and how they got to, like you said, you know, the decision to kill Bruce Gordon and the more, because I feel like, I don't know. Well, I guess, you know, superhero comics, like American based. So there's like a heavy, I don't know, like religious Christian, oh, yeah, thou shalt not kill, mm-hmm, embedded in just like every single superhero story, like superheroes don't kill. That's bad.
And it's always like the worst thing that they could do.
Right. Right. Whereas opposed to, you know, in, you know, anti-heroes that live in the gray area that are probably more realistic in terms of, you know, the greater good and whether like killing this one bad person is for the good of like the whole or whatever, and having to make those decisions. And I get like people, you know, when you write comic stories, you don't want kids to be like, yeah, it's okay to kill sometimes. So that I get it, but it was interesting to see the lines that the different heroes made and why they made them. So that was kind of interesting to see, and just see how, like, what was haunting Pat specifically. Mike and Cameron's dynamic was really, it was the most interesting that Cameron has ever been on this show. He came in and this is like, I feel like this is a Cameron that I wish we got like IRL from the beginning, like when his dad died, like vengeful, yeah, Cameron.
He showed so much personality here.
Yes. They have been, you know, stifling this boy acting wise. Because here he got to be, you know, very like taunting, and, you know, he's like, you know, someone told me something. You almost feel like maybe Eclipso did tell, because that'd be like the easiest way to get to Mike is actually turn Cameron, which is what Cindy failed to do. So seeing that dynamic and Mike, like, I agree with you that it felt like he got off easy with killing Jordan compared to Yolanda killing Brainwave. So this is, he was actually having to confront it, which was really interesting for him. But I also like that, you know, Courtney was there to save him. Because like some of the things that Cameron was saying was like really, really tough for, you know, a kid to hear. It's felt like your mom didn't want you. Barbara, I'm going to kill her, so she doesn't want you. And, you know, like all this kind of stuff.
This is the first time that they confirmed too that his mom ditched him.
Yeah.
They never actually said
that. We didn't really know what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty good, like, psychology into Mike's mind as well. And then Barbara with Jordan McKent, and how, like, it literally felt like claustrophobic where she's, like, stopped in the car. And, it's, you know, she knows it's, she started out knowing that it was not real and then kind of, like, snowballed, right. No pun intended. But, you know, so all of their, those little, like, vignettes were really, really cool and really, really, like, tense and spooky and just really interesting. And then also just, like, with Courtney, I love that even before, like, when she and Pat were just discussing, you know, what to do about the storm, what to do about Rick, what to do about Eclipso. And, you know, Pat was just like, you know, we don't know what we're dealing with. He's still kind of like hedging. And Courtney's kind of like putting her foot down a little bit more, like, you know, we're never going to be prepared enough for you, Pat. So we need to do something like now. And I like that she, you know, even after that conversation where they kind of ended at a stalemate, when she went up to her room, she's like on the phone with Beth, like, you have your goggles, I have the staff, what can we do? I like that they're being like very proactive in how they're going to handle Eclipso. So that was really, really cool. Overall, very, very solid episode. No joys. Were there any? There were, but, you know, yeah, tell like me what
first,
they were.
First off, yeah, this whole like, oh, let's just leave Rick in jail just when Tatiana was interested in him because he'll be safer in jail. Was just like, oh, like, I don't even like him and I wouldn't leave him in jail. Like, come on now. That should be like the first priority. Like, well, let's just chill on that. Seems like a good place for him. It's only destroying his entire future. That's totally cool. So yeah, I did not like that. That was very weird. And I think contributes to like, I don't know what they're doing with Pat this season. Even like having this be the secret, and seeing, like obviously seeing how they treated him, it's, like, it doesn't endear you to him, but it does make you feel bad for him. Except you're right that it just looks ridiculous that this grown man can't.
They really should have cast it. Like, and I saw someone on Twitter, like, if it's decades ago, like, why is it still Luke Wilson?
Like, he's not Paul Rudd. He's not that ageless, let's be honest. So, yeah. I thought that was a little bit odd. Like, I liked what they did with it, but I thought that they didn't necessarily approach it in the best possible way. Also, it does make me wonder, like, because this was decades ago, Joel McHale, also, does he age? Is he literally ageless? Is that Starman? I don't know.
Because
they all, like, you know, like, anyone who's alive should now be ancient because they're already ancient. So anyway, doesn't matter. I will say, like, it is a negative that this is in fact the most and best we've gotten from Cameron. They really just do not care about this character. The only person they care about less, I would argue, is Rick. Because that Rick is like by default,
and it's funny because they look exactly the same.
That's probably why they think they're giving them so much, because they're giving them both these things, and they didn't realize it's actually two dudes that they're giving it to. So anyway,
so they have to do it one at a time, right? So they can differentiate.
But yeah, so that was like a bit of a no-no. I feel like there was others, but since I wrote nothing down, I don't recall. I mean, I will say Starman sucks, and in fact, most of the JSA sucks, and now I'm like, do we want the JSA back? And also, like, they actually have no connection to the JSA. Like, Rick does. But, like, his parents were, like, were they even there? I don't remember. Were they already dead at that point?
No, Iron Man was alive.
They weren't.
Huh?
What point?
Like, were they in the flashbacks? Were Rick's parents in the flashbacks?
Yeah, Iron Man was in the flashbacks.
Oh, okay. Same. I didn't. That's my feelings on Rick. I didn't remember which one was his dad. But anyway, so point is, like, Rick has a connection, and then Pat was there, right? So those are the two people that I would think your vengeance would be focused on. if you are Calypso, Bruce, whatever, right? But I guess he doesn't really have vengeance. He's just like, I just like to wreak chaos. So I think it'd be more interesting if it was actually like orchestrated to punish Pat, right? For mm-hmm. his involvement in what had happened. As opposed to just being like, well, this is the new set of heroes. And because they believe in the legacy of the old heroes, I will dismantle it, you know? So I don't know. I just thought it was like a little bit like of a, not as exciting as it could have been, even though I thought the way that they did, like you guys already said, like the way that they had came to the decision, the way they showed that it was like wrong while still like kind of understandable, made a lot of sense. And this is not a no joy, but as you were talking about like, you know, murder and how it's so ingrained that it's like wrong in the comics and stuff, then heroes don't kill. It makes you wonder, like, does everyone who writes like heroes, the protagonist hero that would never kill, like, are they against the death penalty? Or is it the law, like, only the law can kill, you know? And then people who write their anti-heroes as the ones that kill everyone, I'm like, so you're pro-death penalty? Like,
I am the law.
Exactly. So, like, now I just want to question everyone.
That is an interesting point, actually. I feel like they probably don't even dwell on it for that long. But I think like what most irritated me, because I was just confused by it, is the whole decades ago. I feel like the show wants to be vague, but like you were saying about Luke Wilson being set in still in the past and everybody still being adults that we know them in the future makes no sense. And also it made me wonder when it was set, because if this was like 1990, this was technically decades ago. As sad as to say.
That's sad.
But then we had the opening with the what's her face, the daughter of McNider. It seemed like it was the 50s
1950s.
Or
60s. Yeah.
So it was like, I think it's set in the 1950s. Yeah. So I don't understand how they could have even like they should be very old now, and they. If they had kids much
That's
later
true.
On, like they would,
oh
their
God.
Kids would also be much older than they are now. Like teenagers, Rick should be like, I don't know, in his 40s probably. So it doesn't make any sense. And I feel like they're trying to keep it vague so they can keep the old school style, but it doesn't really track with modernity because like you have them using cell phones and stuff. So it doesn't make any sense to me. And the ages don't make any sense to me either. So I would like some clarity personally. Otherwise,
That's a good point, man.
Yeah, so it doesn't make any sense. Besides that, I mean, I know that now that Beth and Yolanda and Rick are out of the picture for now, what irritated me, I think, the most was that Beth is still technically around and she didn't actually cave to Calypso. So I feel like it would have been nice to have a scene with her in it rather than her talking to Courtney over the phone, because I would have liked to hear like what she was saying, you know, and so they can actually maybe have time to build a rapport now that Rick and Yolanda are not there, you know, because I feel like Beth gets the least in terms of that with FaceTime with Courtney specifically, especially this season. So it would have been nice to like see what she's up to and even, I don't know, a little bit about her parents, even though it wouldn't maybe have fit the tone of this specific episode, but like just something, you know. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I would say fine, but like, you know, I like that at least they touched on the fact of what happened last week with Beth. Like Courtney gave us the synopsis of Beth thought she saw someone in Calypso in her house and, you know, them talking on the phone. So it shows that there's like continuity there of Beth having this experience and then calling Courtney and telling her about it. And then Courtney like going to Beth and be like, here's what we need to do, blah, 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 blah. So I was kind of fine with that. And there's so much centered around these like three Whitmore Dugans that I felt like it was fine. But like, the thing that sticks out to me the most is like what you guys are saying about like, you know, Luke. Okay. So the JSA is the one is a sausage fest. Like, I was like, there's so many dudes. There's so much testosterone in this group. It's so uncomfortable. But then they're all like mean. Like when Pat was trying to ask Jay a question, and I think it was Walker. It's probably, I don't know. I don't know what they look like out of their suits, but one of them was like, only members ask questions. I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and well, the meanness to which they treat Pat it's so frustrating.
And I feel like if he was, if he was like Mike's age, because I was thinking to myself, like, well, you know, Mike is definitely, or Pat is definitely the Mike of this group. But then I was like, no, but like RJSA likes Mike. And I can't even say that about this JSA and Pat. But I feel like if Pat was actually a literal teenager, like if he was like a Robin and like, you know, actually a kid, then still rude, but also it would make, like, the dynamics would make more sense than grown man telling another grown man, you can't sit with us.
You can't sit. Yeah, that's basically it. He's like, you're just the mechanic. I'm like, that's just rude, man.
Like, it's so rude. Like, if he was a kid, I could understand, like, you know, kid, this is adult stuff or this is grown folks' business. But, like, he is 40-something-year-old man being bullied by other late 40s, early 50-year-old men. Like, this is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. And I also didn't like Pat in the present being like blasé about keeping Rick in jail because he'd be safer there. Like, come on, Pat. Like, seriously, this is all my continuation of my Pat hating streak of season two. Like, why would you leave Rick in jail? Like, why didn't he get him out on bail like immediately? Like, why wasn't he at the house? Like, you know, why was Rick still living with his uncle for an entire season after they know he's a dick from last season? Like, come on. Like, that surprised me as well that he was still living with his uncle. So yeah, I didn't like that because I feel like Rick is definitely not safer in jail. Like, no kid is safe in jail. That's stupid. And then also just like, it was a very intense scene, but Jordan McKent's whole stick to Barbara about why he's mad at her is because he loved her and she did not love him. It's like, okay, you're a stalker, like, stay away from her, get a job, whatever. But also, like, I feel like I remember this, that his previous wife also had a man and he still took her. So this is like a pattern for him, and it's very, like, you know,
how very, you know, Bruce Gordon of him.
Yes, yeah. So that's like a no-no. Like, no, thank you. Feedback from Sonia. What did she think of the episode?
Yes, Sonia has several thoughts. Pull up this email. Sonia says, first of all, thank you so much for letting me come on the podcast and talk endlessly about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's literally one of my favorite shows, and no one I know watches it, and it was nice to get to discuss it with other people. Also, it's like a dream come true to be a part of your podcast. I was smiling so big when Tati said, we are the latest assumption, recap DCTV in a flash, because I literally listen to that intro all the time, and to be a part of that was unreal. Thank you again. Welcome. We're so happy to have you. Now on to my feedback. For Stargirl, this episode was great, as it's always nice to get backstory into the JSA. I also really liked each Eclipso hallucination and thought it was really well done. The opening sequence was pretty scary, with Bruce bringing Eclipso back from the island and allowing Eclipso to possess him and kill someone to get the girl he loves. Like, wow. Also, side note, but what kind of a creepy guy keeps a photo of a woman who's not his girlfriend or wife and who's married to someone else on their desk? Like, why? That's a good point. It was nice that Courtney and Beth are creating a plan of attack to take down Eclipso and how they want to use the goggles and the staff to defeat him. I wish we could have seen Beth on screen this episode, as I feel the show is lacking scenes between Beth and Courtney. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice to see the two of them interact, as usually we see the whole group or just Wildstar and Hour Knight interacting. Cameron is so scary. I know it was an Eclipso hallucination, but oh my God, poor Mike. He must have been so scared. And the dog, I cried when it happened. So glad it was all fake. It was super creepy when Cameron was like, I was 8 when my mom died and you're 15, so you got 7 years on me. And after I was done being creeped out, I was like, oh no, what's happening to Barbara? Thank God she's okay. Poor Mike having to relive the trauma of accidentally killing Icicle, along with his mom leaving and the JSA not wanting him on the team. This poor boy. The funeral flashback scene was really sad. You really feel the team as a family aspect there. The JSA members are so annoying, not letting Pat talk or ask questions except for Jay. He seems a lot better than the rest, actually acknowledging Pat and all. I laughed out loud when Pat was like, oh my God, it's the Flash, super loudly, and Sylvester had to remind him that they were in public. So the only way to stop Eclipso is to kill the person he is possessing. This just got even darker, which is saying something because this season has already been pretty dark. Nice reference to the other members of the team with Green Lantern, the Spectre, and the Hawks. Speaking of Green Lantern, I hope to get to see Jennifer again.
You will. She was in the trailer.
Oh, yay. I'm excited. And so glad that she managed to help Beth. Macbeth. Barbara C. through the hallucination and she was able to escape. And poor Pat hallucinating the guy that JSA killed. Did anyone else get Lady Macbeth vibes with the blood on his hands? Oh.
Oh, yeah. I was like, is that blood like literal or metaphorical?
Courtney finding out what the JSA did and how Pat was complicit in it and that Barbara knew about it. Yikes. Hope the Whitmore Dugans can work this all out. Super creepy that little kid Eclipso is just watching them fight. Thank you so much, Sonia.
Okay, predictions.
I don't know, but I'm interested to hear yours, Jess.
Yes, Jess, okay, tell us.
Because I don't know if it's going to work out the way that I want it to, but when Sylvester said that Eclipso is like a spiritual parasite, and we have, when he goes into his human form, he's Bruce, but Bruce is a kid. So I'm wondering, like, does he suck the life out of like Bruce Gordon to like child form? Like, not like, is he like Benjamin Buttoning Bruce Gordon's like form? And so like when he gets down to child, like, maybe he'll start looking for another host because, you know, like I doubt that he can stay in one host forever. If he's like a parasite, he's got to like, you know, consume one body and then go to the other. Go to the next one. But then I'm like tripped up because they killed Bruce Gordon and he went back into the thing. So I'm like, is Bruce like a different body or child? Is he in a body? Because like the other thing was Pat was saying, you know, the dark thing about the JSA is because they had to kill a person. But Eclipso didn't really possess Cindy, like, because she's gone and she's gone now. So is Eclipso just like in natural form? Is he still somehow, you know, channeling Bruce Gordon's like spirit or whatever, and he's still feeding off of that? If he is, can they just kill him, the evil, without killing like an actual person? If he jumps into someone else, then that's like that would be like the new predicament of, do we kill this person or how do we like exorcise Eclipso from a person? But right now he's not in a person, so I think that's like the interesting part to me. But yeah, I was thinking, like, when you were talking, I was like, oh, my God, what if he is just, like, sucking the years out of Bruce Gordon, and this is, like, Bruce Gordon, but a child form, and yeah, once he gets down to, like,
he's Benjamin
toddler, Buttoning. Yeah, then he's going to have to, like, you know, jump over to a fresh, new adult body so he can start the process over again.
Toddler Eclipse, so that's super scary.
I mean, he would leave before toddler form, because yeah, obviously you can't do anything in that. But still, he's getting close. He's like reaching the breaking point.
Can we kill a baby?
But
talk about dark.
But would that be the case? Just because I'm thinking about when he killed Rebecca, he was also child Bruce, and they hadn't killed Bruce yet.
Child Bruce.
But we don't know, like, when we, I guess this, like, goes back to your point about the vagueness of decades ago, because then when he took over Bruce's body, was killing Rebecca in that same decade, or was that decades later?
You know? Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. See, we don't want the vagueness, show.
So tune in next week to find out. Next time on Dragon Ball Z. Okay, moving over to side B, the greater good, Supergirl. The episode was called Magical Thinking. Kara is in a race against Nixley to find the totems, and it gets her super stressed. Nixley finds the humanity totem super easily, but the test is not what she expects. Activating the totem sucks all the humanity out of those around the totem and channels it directly into her, giving her all the feelings and compassion, which freaks both her and Kara out. Lena could be the Super Friend's secret weapon, but she is uncertain about using her newfound magical abilities effectively against Nixley after her first attempt breaks Nia's brain. Meanwhile, it's Take Your Reporter Friend to Work Day. William gets the golden ticket to visit the tower and hang out with the Super Friends, but he struggles to write a story on the Super Friends that abides by their ground rules while also satisfying Andrea, who wants all the gossip and details that Super Friends want to keep redacted. He does manage to help Lena with her magic by basically just telling her, you know, the secret to recipes is putting your foot in it, you know, not really caring about being precise, just like put your foot in it and, you know, get it done. Lena realizes that her magic does work through this process. And what it actually does is it exacerbates the effect of the totem by sucking even more humanity out of people and overloading Nixley with feelings. Kara wants to use this to gamble on the citizens in National City and repeat the process until Nixley is so overloaded with her feelings that she decides she does not want the totem anymore, can't handle it. Lena does not want to do this unless they are transparent with the city, giving William an angle to write his story the way that he wants to write the story. While all this is going on, Kelly is thrilled when little alien child Esme has found a new home, but things go awry with the, riots around the city, and one shows up in front of their house, and she acts, discovers that she has fire-breathing powers. She didn't know she could do that. And then her mom is just like, you know what? I am going to just have you be our own personal ADT system. You stay out here and fight off all the bad people while I stay in my house. So, obviously Esme is very scared. Her future is put in danger by her foster parents. And then afterwards, they don't even want her because they say she's not the quote unquote right fit. Esme is so disappointed at the thought of going back to foster care, and Danson, looking at that sad little angel face, have no choice except to adopt this child. The episode was directed
as
by
they should.
Simon Burnett and written by Karen E. Macer and Derek Simon. What sparked joy?
Well, the entire Kelly, Esme, Alex storyline sparked joy. I have to say, I'm so glad that the storyline was predictable in the best way, because as soon as I met Esme, I was like, they're gonna adopt her. And I was just waiting for that to be true, and it finally was in this episode. And the way they went about it made sense. I felt so bad for poor little Esme. And they even had me, in suspense momentarily, when the foster mom was like, oh, no, it's okay. Right after, I was like, oh, she's actually worried about her. I guess she's not a nice foster mom. And then later she was like, no, I'm not. I'm an evil foster mom. Surprise. And then the fact that they were just gonna take her back until they saw how she reacted and they saw the cars coming, and they're like, well, what are we gonna do? We need a child. She is a child. What is the problem? Let's just take her home. Was great. Also, I'm glad that we did get a lot of Kelly's storyline this episode, because at the start of the episode, she's like, oh, I've got to go do some social work. And I was like, again, but it's okay. We got to see the social work. So it worked out. Whew. I also liked the William storyline. I did like that he was navigating, how he's going to approach reporting on the super friends and things that the public needs to know, while also fending off Andrea and her, need to take the salacious
need
angle.
To be TMZ.
Exactly. I was momentarily concerned about which route he would take, because I don't know that the writers care about him enough to keep him integral, keep his integrity, which is the one thing that he has as a character trait. So I'm glad that they did. And that he was like, listen, I have found a way to do it that should satisfy you. And if you're not satisfied, then you can just kiss my ass and I'll go to the Daily Planet. So that was great. I enjoyed that. Also liked the dynamic with Lena. I don't feel like we've really seen them interact much. It was nice to see him give her advice that was useful, even if he himself does not have magic. I was happy that Lena stood up to Kara about what she believed, and also something that I thought Kara should believe. I guess the rest of that should go right into Not Joyce, because I don't know what happened there. But in that scene, I was like, yeah, Lena, you explain yourself, because it doesn't make sense. But I did enjoy, I'm sorry, I don't know the name of Nixley's actress, but the performance of the taking on too much joy or human emotions and getting feelsy.
Name was Petra.
Yeah, well, she was losing her mind all episode, and it was great fun to watch. And I like how the roles are reversed from what you'd expect. You'd have the alien overlord and they're human minion that they're pushing to do things. And in this case, it was the dude that's driving Nixley around. That's get it together, Nixley. You can't be like this. Which was weird, but fun. Nia's brain breaking. It just, Nia is always I love that Nicole just seems to be having a blast this season. So she was great. And also the part where she takes William away so that Supercore can hash it out or, whatever, it was fun. She's like, all right, let's go look over here. And also, I feel like it was nice that we got to see a lot of Kara and Lena scenes in general, even though the storyline was a bit wonky, because I feel like we have not done enough of that for the final season. So.
Agreed. I think her name is PETA Sargent.
Oh, thank you.
Peta, okay. Sergeant. But yes, she is
someone
excellent.
Call Peta. I'm sorry.
She is excellent. Like the whole, what was that line? She's like, how can I be expected to do anything when the world is falling apart? I feel that in my soul every day.
I need to save the snow leopards. Yeah. It's up to me.
Yeah, all of that stuff was so great. It made me like laugh out loud. It was hilarious. I think she did a great job doing that. And it was an interesting twist too, because, you know, you'd expect her to just continue on her rampage trying to get what she wants. And then she's like, I can't do these things because I'm good now and I feel things and I empathize with people. Excuse me. So it was really like nice to see that shift in her, and it was unexpected at the same time. I really loved William's storyline more than I thought I would, because when they first introduced the fact that he was going to be embedded with the super friends, I was like, oh no, what does this mean? And my first thought was that he was going to find out Carr's identity immediately. But it was just funny to see like him being introduced to them. And Alex is like, and this is Supergirl, which the secret, my sister does not, Carr does not know. And I'm like, really laying it on thick. But it was just funny interactions in general. And, you know, making the ground rules and William being uncomfortable with them, and but still wanting to be there and not, you know, make it so that they don't trust him anymore, because they've trusted him with a lot. He's like the first civilian in their ranks besides Lena anyway. So it was really
and Alex.
So it was really great to see him like interact with them, and I feel like it's giving him a bigger role and something like really interesting to do on the journalistic side, because we don't really get to see that part often, because Nia and Carr are always, you know, superheroing. So I feel like it maintains the Catco presence throughout the series. And I really liked his conversation with Lena, because you're right, like, I agree, Tati, like, we haven't really seen him interact with her at all, which is interesting, considering that she and Andrea are friends. But it was really nice to see the way that he gave
Will
her
Lena, here we come.
Please, no. Say Will.
Lex Day. No, Lex Day.
The fact that, like, he gave her advice about, you know, doing something her own way instead of just trying to copy and be like your parents, which is very relatable. And I feel like, you know, it was really great advice, and the way that he delivered it too. It wasn't, you know, condescending or like, you need to do this because people are dying, but like very gentle. And I like that a lot. And I also like Lena telling Kara that this was not her and why she should not be doing, making these decisions, and her plan was like awful or whatever. Because that was a nice moment between them, and it just continues to show their friendship and how much they trust each other, and also how much they listen to each other as well. For the brief moment they did, she did listen to her. So that all of that was great. I really, really loved Esme. Oh my God, she's just like the most adorable child. I wanted to squeeze her cheeks as soon as Kelly dropped her off at the foster home. I was like, adopt her, do it now. Because like, how can you not? And I knew that it was gonna go that way, but I didn't know how long it was gonna take. And I feel like she's just like the sad eyes, and Alex and Kelly being there together and saving her on the front porch, and then later that conversation about her having to go back and not having a family ever, and they're just like, we have to do this. And it was so cute, and even them like flirt fighting was excellent. It was just like, she's like, oh, really? They don't, they're like her. And then you're like, kick. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about their day in the middle of like kicking ass will be great.
I think it's a great way to catch up when you're like a superhero couple, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So I think all of that was great. And I feel like the relationship building in this episode was really fantastic, as well as just expanding the reach of journalism and having William finally tell off Andrea, because she's the worst boss. And I'm so glad somebody told her something, because she spent way too many episodes just saying the shittiest things. So
unchecked.
Exactly. So I'm glad that, you know, he finally stood up to her, because she had that coming.
Yes, definitely. I really enjoyed William's storyline, and it's kind of like interesting, because, you know, weird thing about like him being in bed with the super friends, with Andrea and her ideas of what she wants in the back of his mind, it could go one of two ways. Like, you know, because he could have gone in there, and there are several points where, you know, they said stuff like, Carr's like, oh, well, can we check the satellites? He's like, you have satellites? He's like, that's a
yeah,
story.
It was like all the super friends do illegal things.
Yes, like they do, they're doing like illegal things, or like, when Kara and Lena were having their argument about whether we should gamble the lives of National City citizens, and William's just like standing there like, and he's like, let's go look at the appliances. Like, there's so many things if he was like a nosy ass reporter that he could write and really like do a lot of damage when he was supposed to be doing, you know, some like puff piece on Super Friends. And especially because they weren't giving him a lot to work with, because they were saying like, you can't do this, this is redacted. So like, you know, he was in kind of a hard space. And so he could have either gone one way or the other. But I like that, you know, they found a way to make him the new Lena, like the new person that's on the team and friends with all the people in real life, but doesn't know that they're superheroes, and still kind of like have his own little role. So I like that they were able to kind of roll him into that, you know, and make it kind of make sense in that way. So he has something to do for the rest of the season. I also like that he had that opportunity to bond with Lena, which I'm kind of confused because I thought that when they told Lena that he was coming, that they were not going to have her there when he was there, so they wouldn't have to explain it. And then she was there when he was there. And he knows that she has magic now. So, like, I don't know how that, you know, there's some, you know, loopholes or like plot holes in this episode, but never mind. But I did like the conversation that they had about, you know, following a recipe that your mom used to make, because I feel like that is relatable for a lot of people. Like, you know, when you go home and you have home cooked meals, it's stuff like your mom makes, but, you know, depending on, it's like some families, like mothers and grandmothers hold their recipes, you know, hostage, and you can't, you know, they won't tell you what the secret ingredient is or whatever. But it's like once they're gone and you have to follow like a recipe and you're trying to like recreate it, and you can't like recreate something, you know, when you've moved away and you're trying to recreate mom's mac and cheese, like it doesn't taste the same because it's not your mom. So there's all that kind of stuff. So I like that kind of conversation about, you know, not trying to follow things exactly, but just, you know, when you're pouring out ingredients, just keep pouring until the spirit of your ancestors tell you to stop. Kind of feeling. I thought that was like a really, you know, good conversation, and kind of let Lena relax a little bit so she could actually do magic and what she was supposed to do. Love Esme. She is so cute. Like the whole, like when Kelly was dropping her off and gave her the little bracelet, she was just adorable. When it's like a scary thing, because like when they confronted the bad guy that was at their house and she breathed fire and she scared herself. She's like, oh, she looks so scared. Like, oh my God, you're so cute.
Protect this child.
Yeah, she was yes. So cute. The little actress, Mila, I think her name is. She is so good. And so afterwards, you know, when she is out, and because her mom let her in the house and she's scared, and then, you know, Sentinel and Guardian save her, first of all. So she meet her mom, her future moms, in their superhero costume. They come to save her as superheroes. And then the end of the episode, they come to save her as Kelly and Alex, which is so cool. So I think, like, just in general over season 7, that the writers are doing the best job character dynamic wise with the Kelly and Alex relationship and progressing that to its happy conclusion at the end of the series. I really enjoy everything that they're doing, from Alex being supportive of Kelly becoming Guardian to, you know, the conversation about race and how that plays into what Kelly goes through, and Alex, you know, having to really stop and understand like what it is that how she can help Kelly, to, you know, them both kind of like looking at each other and giving each other like a look, like an understood kind of thing of like, yeah, we have to adopt this poor child into their care, is all just like so good to see how their relationship is building. So I love that storyline and how it's progressing. I thought Lena accidentally breaking Nia's brain was hilarious. and also just Nia's / Nicole did incredible stunt work, and that impressive like flip stunt thingy. Like it was like, I don't know, like Black Widow or Harley Quinn style, like flip around the guy's neck and like bring him down. It was awesome. That was a great stunt. And then also, like, Kara just, I think they're at the Botanical Gardens, and this guy was, like, running up. She just puts out her hand, and he just falls out. Hilarious. Your reminders, like, nice reminders that Kara, like, how strong Kara is, was great. Obviously, William sticking it to Andrea at the end and telling her to, you know, either take what I give you or I'm going to go somewhere else.
You get what you get, and you don't
get what you get, and you better like it. you know, what else is fair? Oh, like Kara's like giggle season, giggle fit when at game night when Nixley was feeling joy. It's hilarious.
Oh yeah, I forgot to say I liked that she came in and they were playing like Jenga.
Jenga, like, yeah.
Hello, like, what are
the
we
world
doing?
Is ending.
Yeah.
At first I was creeped out. I was like, what's happening? Why is she laughing?
But that was funny. Nick's like the compassion thing pulled in at the right time because like I was scared that Nixley was gonna like actually kill a security guard and then she got whammy and I was like yes cool, but yeah I agree with you like her like little monologues what was me monologues about why she feels so much it's like I have to save the snow leopards and everything was great. No joys, what are they?
Well, what can I say. I think that my biggest no joy is just the general setup for the final season is a bit of a letdown. I think that we could go a little bit bigger than a totem hunt, especially because I feel like they set it up so well in the first half by including her dad, by having her connect with Nixley, so it really felt like there was, you know, like a bond between them, or like they might understand each other, they might come to like an impasse or whatever, you know? So I feel like they could do a much more personal story in this back half with Kara versus Nixley. I feel like they're kind of maybe doing it a little bit now that she's like connected to Nixley's emotions, so like they'll probably go that route, but it just feels very, very superficial at the moment. And I feel like they could have gone further with that. And just in general, like, I don't really need you to hold my hand for the episodes of like, we're gonna go to this totem and then we're gonna go to this totem and then when one person has over half of them the game is over and we have to force a match or whatever they're gonna do. So that's a little bit meh. Outside of that, I did think that the super core like struggle was just really weird. First off, I'm probably gonna like get eggs thrown at me. I think that Katie is a wonderful actress and I like her almost all the time. And I love Lena, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought that, I don't know why, I felt like her performance was like strange to me in this episode. Maybe because the character like situation did not make sense. But it felt like she was smiling through the scene where she was talking about the damage that had already been done with her magic. And I was like, what is the smile? Is she going crazy because she's like magic power, darkness? Or is she happy that something happened, even though it wasn't what she wanted? Or is the smile like the pained smile of like, oh, I can't believe that happened and I'm smiling awkwardly? And I was just very confused by that. And then I was just distracted because Kara was like, yeah, let him have it. Screw those people. Take their humanity. I'm sure we can reverse it later. And then she got all like, and you're not going to help me, Lena? Oh my God. After all the times that you have helped me, you're just going to stop helping me now? And I was like, did someone like switch Kara's mind? What is happening? So this is very weird behavior to me all around. I thought in that storyline, I thought that we had decided that it was a bad idea, but then we were like, no, it's a good idea. And then they were both like, I'm sorry that I told you it was a bad idea, even though it was. And I'm sorry that I made you do it, even though it worked. Like, I'm glad it worked. And I think the concept is cool. I just don't think that Kara should have been so gung-ho about it, you know? Like, it makes sense, but it should have been Kara who was like, we should do it. It should have been like, I know Brainy, like, was gone or whatever, so, like, that's why. But, like, if someone was going to posit that as a solution, it would be Brainy, you know?
Right.
So, anyway. That's all.
Yes, I agree. I think, well, first of all, that scene, at first I was like, okay, so they're not going to go through that plan. And then they come out and say,
We're going through this plan.
I was so confused. Wait, I don't understand how you went from point A to point B. Like, did I miss a scene? What's going on? But it was just such a weird transition because it made no sense whatsoever in the story because you just had this conversation about it. And
I felt like the ethical issue was, it was an ethical issue, not that, you know, it was an ethical issue and a secret.
Yeah.
So if we remove the secret, right, then it's not an issue anymore. It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, so that didn't make any sense. And then, I mean, I agree with you, Tati, about it not feeling like, or it's just basic in it, the final season, because it's just not, it's not, A, it doesn't feel like last season, and B, it should, because I don't know how far in advance they knew that this was last season, but I feel like it's far enough,
like, yeah, I feel like
far enough in advance that they would, like, know to set up the last few episodes. Yeah. So I feel like they could have had it so that there was some more emotional exploration, because I feel like it's very plotty. Yeah. And I feel like there's no time whatsoever in the last few episodes, because they're trying to catch the totems, to just breathe and, I don't know, play Jenga, you know, or have a little bit of fun, or just have fun, more fun character dynamics and scenes. Like, we could see Kara at work. We could have her have conversations with Lena and Alex and everyone without having to be on the job, on the Supergirl job. So I feel like it's just becoming all about Nixley and finding these totems, and it's becoming very too procedural for me, you know? Yes. So that's what's frustrating. Also, Brainy not being in this episode, I'm like, I don't know. I missed him. I mean, that's pretty much it. There's just like a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily make logical sense. And I feel like I would just enjoy the episodes more if they weren't so Nixley driven. You know, we need a break from that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with you guys. And I feel like for the final season, this like Easter egg hunt of finding the totems is pretty basic. And it's very plotty, and it doesn't really feel worthy of like a final season. And there's no like emotional stakes for Kara, other than I have to save the world, which she could do any other season. But it just feels like this season should have some more depth to Kara, or like, you know, tie into Kara, something that's very personal to her, and it just doesn't really seem like that. Also, I agree with you guys that Kara gambling on the citizens of National City doesn't seem very Kara-like. I agree that it, you know, if there was like a person, like that kind of personality to, posit that as like a potential option would have been like Brainy, and he wasn't there, so he couldn't do it. But I just feel like, I don't know if, you know, did some of that humanity get sucked out of Kara accidentally or something, and they didn't say anything. But yeah, it was very confusing for them to be arguing about this and making it like a sticking point of to do it or not to do it. And then them being like, yeah, let's not do it. And then turn around and be like, yeah, we're going to do it. I'm like, is this a trap? Is this like, because William was right there. Again, like, William was like right there. And so I'm like, are they like tricking him? Is this a trap for him to like do something? But then they was like, go ahead and write the story. So I was like, okay. So I don't know how, like, you know, whatever. I guess we're doing this.
Also, I feel like as journalists, Kara and Nia should know that you can't have somebody be amongst you, interview you, and then tell them how to write their story. Like, that's not really up to you.
What's off the record or not? Yeah.
Well, not even off the record. Like, you can say it's off the record, but like, somebody's there, and how they end up, you can get the gist of the story, but you can't tell them the angle with which they should write it if they already have this information. You know, they were dictating too much.
Right. So yeah, that whole disagreement scene, that I didn't understand it. It doesn't feel personal to Kara or any of the characters outside of Kelly and Alex's like story arc. That's like the best thing about this season. You know, it's a nice little side adventure game of let's go find the totems, but it doesn't really feel, it doesn't have like the gravitas of like a final.
It feels like a legend season.
Yeah. What did our Supergirl experts, Shang, Suara, and Sonia, have to say?
They had a lot of thoughts. starting with Shang. I absolutely did not understand this episode. It was fun, I guess. Neo is really funny. I'm just overly questioning about this whole totems thing again. The shots were quite interesting this week, though. From the starting scene with Alex pulling out the Jenga block and Kara's fight scene with putting her hand out and stopping the bullet. Plus that spinning camera while Kara and Lena were having that argument was pretty good. The writing was bad, though. Like, hard to believe this is the same dude that did the 100th episode. Only thing that I'm glad with was that they played into the fact that normal humans have nothing on Kara. Number two, every time a human tries to fight Kara, it just reminds me of this gif of super
Harley Quinn. Woman.
Yes, Harley Quinn, somebody throwing something at her, and like, you'll see the gif on Tumblr.
We'll just X that out of the feedback.
Lena should have had that. I can't do magic combo with either Andrea or Nia. Not baking is my own one character trait, William.
Oh, hey, reporter is his second character trait.
I generally can't give a fuck about this man, but his conversation with Lena just felt so out of place. Literally, she could have had this conversation with Kelly, and it could have made for a more genuine connection than whatever the fuck this was. Andrea is going to have an aneurysm once she finds out Lena is the one with magic helping out with the super friends. I joke about how I totally would let Andrea bully the fuck out of me because she's a hot MILF, but I really don't like the direction the writers are making her go. It just makes her look stupid.
Agreed.
Lena and Kara casually saying hey to each other before they shared pot stickers. Cute. But my Asian ass could not stand Kara using her fingers. This is chopstick erasure.
are pot stickers eaten with chopsticks normally?
I assume.
Because I know, like,
I think because you can dip them in the sauce. So you like dip them, like you have the chopsticks and you dip.
Because I know like sushi, you're supposed to like eat with your hands, but and people usually like eat them with chopsticks. So I didn't know like the rule about, I guess pot stickers are.
Everything is the reverse. If you think you eat it with chopsticks, you eat it with hands. Don't. Suddenly be eating curry with my
Oh my god.
Eat curry with a spoon.
That would be so messy.
Not with chopsticks.
Finally, Esme, Alex, and Kelly.
Like a spoon. What are you talking about?
Esme, Alex, and Kelly. Okay, a family. That silent look between Alex and Kelly before Alex went, come here, kiddo. Okay, weeping. El Mariah Shang. Shang, sorry. Suara says, I thought this episode was pretty good. As you might expect, my favorite part was Lena and Kara's dynamic, as they debated how to go about finding Nyxley with the Totem of Humanity and Lena's magic. I love Lena calling out Kara for going too far by suggesting they manipulate people's empathy to defeat Nyxley. It felt like such a natural continuation of their arc. But I was also confused by how they resolved it. Apparently, they solved it by doing it anyway and having William report on it, thus making it okay. LOL. Oh, well, I'm still looking forward to how this develops, as well as the inevitability of Supercore Endgame.
Okay.
Kidding. LOL.
You know
but
what?
They're
not going to say they're not Endgame. So, yeah. Really.
We got like a ask on Tumblr, like, I don't understand why people think this is going to happen.
I also love Nia helping Lena harness her magic by relating her dream powers to hers. I've loved the moments they've had together this season. On the Esme plot, wow, fuck those prospective parents. This is a little random, but I've been listening to the podcast This Land this season, which I highly recommend, by the way, which explores how white parents essentially prey on adopting Native American children with heavy support from conservative legal groups. And honestly, I am now so much more critical of the adopting industry for white people. And this episode honestly reinforced that. When the parents find out that Esme, who was white presenting, could breathe fire, they A, left her outside to defend their house from intruders, and B, decided to not adopt her because she's an alien with powers. What the ever-loving fuck. But it's only shocking and not surprising knowing how the adoption industry can work. I might be comparing apples and oranges here, but that was my honest reaction. But I'm glad that it looks like Kelly and Alex will be adopting her instead, hoping for some great scenes between the three of them going forward and hopefully a dance and wedding soon.
I feel like that's an honest, you know, reaction or an understandable reaction, because, like, I feel like a lot of, you know, like, children of color that are adopted by white parents often end up with, like, a disconnect because their white parents are like, we don't see color. And so, like, the kid is like, but I'm a color. And the way that people interact with me in the world is different from the way that they interact with you, and, you know.
Yeah, so, because they're really not ready to have those conversations with the kids in general.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating. Sonia says, this was a fantastic episode. The whole losing humanity and fighting each other thing reminded me of that scene in the church during Kingsman, The Secret Service. Oh, yeah. That's true. Great choreography this episode. The scenes of Esme and Kelly were so cute. Loved when Esme gave Kelly the bracelet. When the totem said the person who uses it needs to be pure at heart, I was like, that's definitely Kara. No way is Nixley going to pass this test. And then it just asked, are you pure at heart? Nixley said, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, seems legit. And worked for her.
That was so funny.
I understand where Kara is coming from, because writing about how they have magic on their side ruins the element of surprise with Nixley, and also writing about Nixley will cause the public to not trust the super friend. So it's pretty smart on her part. Loved when William was like, wow, you would be a good reporter, and she's like, you have no idea. Andrea hacking William's computer and reading the story while he's writing it is insane, like boundaries. love how apparently Kara and Nia are on the story at the arena. Like, when do they even have time to write articles? It's true. When do they even have time to write articles is my question as well. Speaking purely as a journalist. Nixley having compassion for Mick was hilarious. She's all, oh my God, you're bleeding. Are you okay? And he's like, I could ask you the same question. Why are you being so weird? Lena's spell just increased the potency of the humanity remover, which greatly increased Nixley's compassion and caused her not to be able to get the other totem. While Kara's idea was smart, because overwhelming Nixley with even more compassion could work, they don't know how long it would take before Nixley gave the totem back, and people could really get hurt or even die because of it. Love the light of day comment, because I remember that William's last name is Day, and it has double meaning, because they were going to be transparent about everything and William was going to write the article.
Oh, that's cute.
I'm glad William refused Andrea's ideas for his stories, like revealing the location of the tower and the identities of the super friends. Like, how does that help? It's very clear she knows nothing about reporting. It's true. Alex and Kelly adopting Esme. My heart is exploding. Love the scene where Lena and Kara are eating pot stickers and Kara is literally picking them up with her bare hands. And Lena's like, wow, classy. And Kara with her mouth full is like, hey, you know me. Can't wait for the next episode. Thank you so much, everyone. We will post your feedback to the Tumblr.
Yay! Predictions on where this season will end. You know, we're getting the dream time. Oh, people are asking about like the left film. Like, where could that, you know, obviously they're hoping it leans towards Supercore, but I don't know. Kenny Wait. Could be.
I'm still waiting on Kenny.
You're equally as deluded.
Can Lena's magic conjure Kenny? Like, is that
a thing? I don't know.
What was that?
How many episodes are left?
That's a great question.
What episode was this?
I think it was number 10? 11? Like no. I'm sorry. I'm so wrong. It started back up at 7, and I think this was 12 or 13.
Okay, so there's not enough time to.
Yeah,
and he is out. It's gonna be it's gonna be like nothing, or just
be like Alex and
super core, just enough.
I feel like it'll be Alex and Kelly.
I mean, Alex and Kelly will get married, and then at the wedding, Kara and Lena will look at each other and smile. You know, like the Ryan Taylor smile. Of the finale of the OC, and you can be like, those two crazy kids will work it out when they realize they're off screen later on. The end.
All right, lovely Tati prediction. We can dream.
You will see that dream manifested into reality.
Okay. What about Our Lady with Gumption of the Week? Why is it Esme? Just kidding.
Exactly.
I mean, why you're not wrong. Like,
yeah,
but for the adult, I would give it to
for Stargirl. Oh yeah, Lena. Okay,
she's like, well,
I feel like Lena.
Stargirl. Go.
I mean, no, because like, who are you gonna say on Stargirl? Like, Barbara did not give in. You know,
she kind of did, but then like Shay was like, yeah. Don't give in.
Help to not give in.
I mean, I guess the only person to give it to in that episode is Courtney, because she helped pull everyone out of the hallucinations.
Yes.
Yeah.
She did double the work. But I feel like she hasn't really gotten since, you know, the manifestations began. She hasn't really gotten like her own arc because she's been like just like, let me pull you out, let me pull you out, let me pull you out. So
that's true. So I guess Esme wins.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it to Esme because she's just so cute and she was so brave. And now she has two new moms that will love her. So yay, Esme. You, little baby girl, have won Lady with Gumption of the Week on your first try. Look at you.
Yay!
That is all for this episode. Tune in next week when, oh my God, we have four, because Stargirl and Supergirl will be joined by Legends and Batwoman season premieres.
Already, it just ended.
I know.
What am I supposed to do?
You know, in the meantime, if you have thoughts and feelings, you can always email us at ladieswbgumption@gmail.com or send us asks on Tumblr, ladieswbgumption.tumblr.com, which, by the way, I answered an ask about Black Lightning pops because, you know, Lynn was the only one that didn't get a pop, which is sad news. Mm-hmm. But if you want to vent about stuff like that, then go to our Tumblr or send us your feedback at our email, or you can follow along with us as we live tweet on at DCTV Gumption. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.